Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Hello, everyone. We are so glad that you decided to join us today. And by us, I mean Dr. Alice Benton and Mark Cameron. And, you know, we love to hear the wisdom of the co-hosts. And today we're going to hear from Mark. Mark, just regale us with your wisdom, please.
Oh, I don't even know what regale means, but I'm going to do it. So we're coming off of Holy Week. Holy Week was last week, started Palm Sunday, and now we are in the week after that, Easter Sunday, and so we're in Forgiveness Week. It's not actually Forgiveness Week, I made that up, but it should be Forgiveness Week, right? As we reflect upon, you know, the ultimate gift of forgiveness that Christ gave us through his sacrificial death. So Ephesians 4, 31 through 32 says, "Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you." But how do we forgive when we can't forget? I mean, that's often a question that we have here with callers calling in. So while we can't forget, we can learn a new way to remember. So I recently came across an article that cited a study which said that the brain needs to actually learn to forget certain details to function properly. Because if we remembered every single detail of all the excruciating events that we went through in our lives, I mean, we wouldn't be able to function. Mm-hmm. Now, I've used this quote a few times on here, and many people probably have heard this from Lewis Smedes, who says, "To forgive is to set a prisoner free and discover that prisoner was you." Mm-hmm. But he also goes on to say that when we forgive what we cannot forget, we create a new way to remember. So in other words, as we learn to remember something differently, we rewire our brain, forming new neural pathways, right? Which happens during the forgiveness process, which helps us remember the event differently. Now, there's a clinical psychologist called Professor Everett Worthington who does research on forgiveness, and he came up with this acronym called REACH, is the acronym, R-E-A-C-H. And this is what it stands for. R is for recall. You remember the hurt that was done to you as objectively as you can. The E is for empathize, trying to understand the viewpoint of the other person who wronged you. A is for altruism. Think about a time you hurt someone and were forgiven, then offer the gift of forgiveness to the person who hurt you. C is for committing. You commit publicly to the person who wronged you that you're going to forgive them. And then H is for holding on. Not forgetting the hurt, but reminding yourself that you made the choice to forgive. And that's what we do when we take communion, right? Jesus told us, "Take this in remembrance of me," so we can remember the death that he took on the cross for our sins. But we should also remember that as we go to then go and forgive others. So forgiving is not as much about forgetting as it is about changing the way that we see things. And I'm going to close here with Philippians 3, 13 through 14. Paul says this, "No, dear brothers and sisters, I have not achieved it, but I focus on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize for which God through Jesus Christ is calling us." And so if you're having trouble forgiving what you can't forget, take courage that you can learn to remember the offense that was caused to you in a different way and start to view it through the lens of the sacrificial death that Christ gave us on the cross and the model that he gave us to give to one another here.
Wow. See, I told you he was wise.
Did I regale you?
You did regale me. You know, it's so true. Forgiveness is our work to do, right? I mean, it's really powerful what Christ has allowed for us to be free of. And, you know, we have a book called Forgiving What You'll Never Forget by Dr. David Stoop, which may help someone along that journey. Many of us have work to do on those kind of things. We just got to pay attention to where we are stuck. Thank you, Mark. We'll be right back answering some questions.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We are here and we are taking calls, and we're going to go right to the calls right now. And we're going to talk to Steve, who's calling us from Ontario, Canada, listens on Sirius XM. Hi, Steve. How can we help you today?
Yes, I have a little bit of an issue with a daughter. She's 25 and was living at home, but now she's moved away and found out apparently things ain't going to work the way she planned, and now she wants to move back home, but she's been at my place for 3 years or so and totally had no respect for my house. And so I'm debating, like, what do I do? Like, what do I do with my daughter? You know, if she didn't have the five-year-old son, you know, I would tell her to get out and find out how to make a life for herself, you know?
But now
I have to worry about two of them.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, did you say that she was moved out and now she's moved back in?
No, she wants to move back in.
Okay, so she is currently out of the house. And when she moved out, did she move out to get married? Is that what happened?
Well, she had a boyfriend that she was totally in love with, and apparently it's not working out the way she is. But the thing is, I don't know, like, she's 25, and I feel that she's old enough to be on her own, but with the five-year-old, it's scary, right?
Mm-hmm. Steve, if she doesn't move in with you, do you know what her other option or options are?
I don't know if she has any other options. Mm-hmm.
And where is her mother in all this?
Her mother had passed away a long time ago, and she left when my daughter was 3 months old.
Oh, you raised her alone?
Yeah, and a son.
Oh, Steve, it's been a hard road for you, very hard.
Yeah.
And with all you and your daughter have been through and the loss of her mom, you must feel even a stronger protection and desire to care for her because, you know, she has suffered a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Steve, is she at all addressing that she was irresponsible the last time and she wants to do this differently this time?
Well, she does. I give her multiple times over the past 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I've about had enough of it because when she does come home, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm going to be good and I'm going to keep your place clean, and it just never happens.
Does she have a job, Steve?
No.
So she doesn't have any income. And so what does she do during the day? I mean, I know she's a mom, but she's got a five-year-old, so surely he goes to preschool.
He goes to school, yes, but she does nothing.
Mm.
She's tried numerous jobs, but they never seem to last.
Steve, do you think she might struggle with depression or some mental health problem or even substance use?
Yep, she's been through all that, too.
Do you think she's actively using a substance now?
She says she doesn't, but I have no way of proving it.
And do you know what her drug of choice was before?
Well, mainly marijuana, but she has done crack cocaine that she got hooked on.
And here's one more question, Steve. If she doesn't come to you, where would she go or where could she go?
I don't know where she could go. Like,
Steve, although coming to you may protect your grandson to some extent, it does sound like living with you in a way keeps her stuck in dependency. And then she has the freedom to keep using as well, if that's the case. It unintentionally enables her to stay immature. You see that too, don't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard considering the five-year-old, right?
Absolutely. And so I think that there are two other options, both of which are difficult. One is being firm that you don't think it's good for her or you, for her to live with you, but you might help her get into a shelter. There are a lot of great programs for mothers with young children that include mental health services, employment, career services to get her on her feet in a better way, even substance abuse treatment. So she won't like that, and she'll probably rail against it. But if you're not available, she may have to take that option, and that would help her to grow better than just returning to your home. And if you're afraid that she's being neglectful of that five-year-old, I know you want to protect him by having him in your home, but I'd have you consider whether or not it's at the point of calling Child Protective Services to have his safety evaluated.
Yeah, I don't think she's been to that extreme. Like, I think where the last time she was living with me, the time before I took her out of a place where she got into that trouble. And I think she's been trying to stay away from it. Like, I can't vouch for sure, but that's what she says.
Steve, if she's relatively safe with her boyfriend, although she's wanting to move back in, but if there's a little span of time and it's not urgent, like she has to move in tomorrow, you might also say, hey, if you want to come back, if you're really reconsidering that, I want you to get a job and I want you to get into therapy. And if I see that you've done those two things, then I would consider having you back temporarily. But I need to see action on your part because just words have not been enough. So, Steve, think about which one of these options you have the strength to offer and follow through with.
Yeah, I agree with Alice here, Steve, that if you were to let her back in, there needs to be a concrete plan in place with specific milestones that she has to reach by specific dates. And she's got to be it would be you coming alongside her as she's doing the work, almost like you're the coach rather than you being the rescuer. But, you know, as Alice is saying here, too, that there's a lot of resources, especially for young mothers with young children that are out there. And she and you're not the one who's created the crisis. Sometimes that's the hardest part, mm-hmm. is to recognize that we're not the ones that create the crisis for the people, for our kids. But we need to allow the crisis to happen so that they can have the opportunity to learn and grow. And it sounds like you've been responsible for her for a very long time, mm-hmm. I can understand that because you've been a single dad, your whole life has been like, I am solely responsible for her, but she's mid-20s now. And it's time for her to learn to be solely responsible for herself and responsible for her five-year-old, mm-hmm. too.
Not only that, now I've met somebody. Mm-hmm. And I've been with her a year and a half, and we planned to get married. Ah. And then we were planning to fix the house all up, right?
You can do that, Steve. Yeah. Your daughter's choices don't have to impact your future. And you may need the support in order to heal from this lifelong fix-it mode that, like what Mark, and it's understandable. You've been living in the reactivity because of the loss, and you've done a good job. You've provided a home. But I also think when you get into counseling and you get into support, you'll be able to see the future for your daughter in a good way so that you can understand that when you set that boundary, while it may hurt for a minute, she's going to have a better life and long term, as opposed to just fixing that last minute kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I know, though, eventually if she comes back home, she'll go right back into the same way she was before. She'll just flop on the couch and use the internet, and that's what she does, you know?
Right. And that's the reason why you draw that line, because you know that that's what the future is for her to come back into the house.
So really this is also about your growth here, Steve, not just about her growth. And what you might need to take responsibility for is that you may have overcompensated being the single parent. Yeah. And so when she was growing up in those teen and adolescent years, when she needed probably to struggle to learn to see if she could recover and make it by herself, you may have overcompensated and bailed her out at times so she didn't learn those lessons. And so for you, it's taking responsibility that this is your area of growth, because if you marry now this new person and you keep your daughter dependent upon you, that's going to cause a lot of issues now in your new relationship.
Yeah, and that I don't want.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't. And, you know, Steve...
And yet it comes back to the five-year-old. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Wherever she ends up living, Steve, especially if you help her to get to a shelter, make sure you see that five-year-old and stay in contact frequently, because your presence in his life is stabilizing, even if it's at a distance and you're not under the same roof. And that also allows you to keep an eye on how well he's doing, how well she's parenting him. Stay very active in his life.
Yeah. And, Steve, if you've never had a counselor to deal with all of this, mm-hmm. now is the time. You're looking at a new relationship that you're involved with. And to Alice's point, you're a grandfather and you can, you know, just influence, you do influence this young man's life. But you're going to need support in feeling the feelings of disappointing your daughter when she can't just come and go. And you can get some insight about how the future looks for her. We're so grateful that you called. I'm going to send him a copy of Take Your Life Back. I don't know if you two think of a different one. I think that was the one that was on my mind for Steve.
Steve, I hope you'll also look up John Townsend's The Entitlement Cure, because that really gives you the steps and even scripts of how to talk this through with your daughter.
Yeah, that's good. We'll be praying too. And Steve, check back in with us. We are glad that you called. We're going to go to Glenn, who's calling us from Waldorf, Maryland. She listens on the app. Hello, Glenn. Thanks for waiting. How can we help you today?
Hi. God bless you guys.
Aww.
And I think you all do awesome. Y'all really do. And I love the wisdom for today about forgiveness. I needed to hear that.
Oh, thank you.
So thank you, guys. And my question is, I am currently separated, so my husband believes that we cannot work on a marriage and be in separate households. And my thing is, I believe that we can, and I take it back to, I always say to him, how did we get here? And until we understand how we got here, we can't come back together and work on something until the reason that I moved out has been addressed.
What was that reason?
His porn addiction, I'll call it addiction. His deceit with the finances. His alcohol, use of alcohol and what it does to him when he drinks alcohol. And the constant lying. Mm.
And since you left, has he gotten into his own counseling to work on this?
So he just started, he was going to counseling. He stopped. He wasn't in there very long. He hadn't gone since January. And then last week, he started back up again, so he says. And I have been going to the same counselor for over a year now. And I guess for me, it's the... One, I'm afraid because I feel like that I've been just emotionally abused, and to walk back into the house because he doesn't want to be alone, and because he believes that the only way that we'll ever figure out if it works is if I move back home, and he doesn't do well by himself. And for me, I'm just apprehensive to say, okay, I hear you going to counseling. You say you want the marriage to work, but what are the behaviors that need to change so that it could be a safe place for me to move back? Now, I understand that it doesn't happen overnight. I understand that, and I'm good with that. But I don't want to go back in just to say, and several months later, I'm back to where I am again.
You are a wise woman, Glenn. Hold on. We're going to take a break and we'll come back after this. But, you know, recovery is key to the next part of your marriage, literally. And we're going to talk more about that. But you're pretty wise yourself. It's awesome. We'll be right back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. I just want to remind you we're in the middle of a matching gift campaign right now, and every dollar that you provide gets doubled up to $400,000. We're going to meet that match so that the funds can be released to help us release a lot of people from the struggles and the stuck places. New Life exists to help people in life's hardest places, and we do that through the generosity of so many people, and we want you to be part of that. You can call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can go to newlife.com/donate, or you can text the word match to 28950. We are grateful for all who are supporting this amazing ministry that has helped so many people over 35 years. We're going to keep going in that direction. Right now, we're going to go back to our calls. We're talking with Glenn, and we just talked about how wise you are, Glenn, but you need a little bit of support in this wisdom and a little bit of direction. Mark, let's start with you.
Yeah, Glenn, you really know what you're doing here, and I think you're just calling in just to kind of get affirmation, and so I want to affirm you that you're doing the right thing. You know, something that we say here is when it comes to betrayal recovery is trust the person's actions, not their words, and I think you said something along the lines there too. I do think that when people separate, there should be a separation plan. I actually did a Club New Life video on this. So if you're a Club New Life member, you'll be able to go and search that and look it up. But a separation plan, I think, for the person who's been unfaithful or who's addicted, they need to be in individual therapy, and they need to be in a recovery group too. And as they start to make progress in that, then that's where you can then start to add marriage therapy into there. But I would wait to add the marriage therapy until that they're committed to those two processes first. And then you may have to think about other things that, you know, that are going to be part of a separation plan. I don't know if you have young kids or not, but if you have young kids, you know, parenting time needs to be included in there. You know, date nights, if you're going to agree to have date nights. I think it's a good idea to have location tracking when you're separated, so that, you know, even for him, so that he can see that where you are, because you both need that safety element of it. But I would encourage you to do this too, is to make two lists. One list, you know, you're going to title required, and the other list you're going to title desired. And so under your required list, you're going to put, what do you need to feel safe in this relationship? What do you need, or what do you need to stop? And then the desired list is going to be, what would you love to have, you know, if you had the things on the other list? And the desired list are things that you can work toward being together when you're in a safe relationship. But the required list is what you need in order to feel safe.
That's great. Alice?
Glenn?
Go
ahead, Glenn.
So we talked about that, and he told me to tell him what I need, and then he's going to tell me what he needs. Okay. But one of the things he expressed that he needs is he needs his wife home. And I feel like that he's putting a timing on it, because I haven't been gone quite a year, but he doesn't know if he can live 3 to 6 more months with us being separated, because his thing is he has to have his wife home.
I think he's trying to guilt you back, and he's avoiding doing the work necessary to get you back. That sounds manipulative to me, because you've been real clear what you need from him, and he's only done a scattering of a little bit of work. So he's showing himself to still be in a non-recovery state. And that surface-level compliance can be such a cover-up for the fact that I don't think he's doing the real heart change work, the real behavioral work. As I heard you say, Glenn, that you think he's back in sessions, because I don't think you can trust what he says. And I think you're right not to trust what he says. He really needs to decide if he's willing to provide you objective evidence, consistent evidence over a long period that he's doing the work with a professional, and the professional's giving you feedback about how that work is going. Otherwise, he's not proving himself yet to be a trustworthy man. How do you feel hearing that from me?
I feel that you are exactly on point. I don't have the evidence of that work. And he's gone to every man battle twice. And still coming out of that every man's battle, he continues to behave. And I feel like that is a manipulative way to see or force my hand to say, you know, if I'm done, then, you know, I'm done. And he's thinking, okay, let's see if she's really going to move on or take me at face value, which I mentioned to him, you know, if you have to move on, then move on, but I don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ready for that yet. And you want to push my hand, and that's not love, because love to me is being understanding and talking about how we got here, because we can't move forward if we don't understand how we got here. Right. We've been married for 18 years, and we've been married for 18 years, and out of those 18 years, 17 of those years, you've acted out in that way, right. And even up until I moved, you know, you retaliate by going on dating websites and still looking at porn. If I was there in the house and you haven't changed and I'm out and you still haven't changed, why would I trust that?
I have to
see the evidence.
And, that's right, Glenn.
And you know what I would say, Glenn, when he says, I need you for my recovery, here's what I would say. I think you just identified the next thing that you need to work on in therapy.
That's it. That's it. You know, it isn't just checking off a box like going to every man's battle. It's getting into the work. It's doing sustained victory. It's doing counseling. It's doing the work. That way, it is obvious that he's in recovery. We'll be back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Arterburn with a New Life Moment. No one's a stranger or a welcome recipient of bad news. Yet listen to Bill Gates' wise take on bad news in his book, Business at the Speed of Thought. Bill says, you have to be constantly receptive to bad news, and then you have to act on it. Sometimes I think my most important job as CEO is to listen to bad news. But if you don't act on it, your people will eventually stop bringing bad news to your attention. And that's the beginning of the end. The willingness to hear hard truth is vital, not only for the CEOs of big corporations, but also for anyone who loves the truth. Sometimes the truth sounds like bad news, but it is just what we need. Friends, bad news usually contains a redemptive element. It's important that we don't respond to it with avoidance and denial. Thanks for listening to this New Life Moment, and visit me at newlife.com.
I always love to hear from Steve, and he is towards the end of his sabbatical, but those New Life Moments are so powerful in those teaching segments. And, you know, bad news, it's something like, I don't know if it was on this show or another show, we were talking about how when we get into codependent behavior, we avoid that bad news. We either avoid making the bad news, you know, because we don't want people to feel bad, or we just kind of gloss over when we experience it. But I just want to refer back to Glenn and her call. She is a powerful woman. She's got some clarity, and we're grateful that she called and is, you know, doing everything that she can to hold still for truth. We're going to send her a copy of Worthy of Her Trust Go ahead, Alice.
Becky, there isn't a specific rule of thumb timeline that can be applied to these kind of situations, but I do have to say that I think even a minimum of 6 months of consistent work with evidence of change is still a small amount of time when there have been years or decades of mistreatment and substance use. And so, ladies, and you men who have had to leave because your wives were being abusive, hold strong longer than you want to until you see that sufficient evidence of change.
And have a plan. Mark, you referred to this as well. Separation without a plan is, mm-hmm. I mean, you could do that. We've talked to people who've done that for 25 years, mm-hmm. which is, you know, unreasonable, and it doesn't give you the growth and the healing that you need. But there has to be a plan. And then the hard part is the bad news, like what Steve was just talking about. If you have somebody who's unwilling to do their work, their side of the street, you're going to have to deal with those consequences. And it's sad. We don't want marriages to end, but we want good, healthy marriages. And when there is recovery that is in place, it's really powerful to see the after story. We're going to go back to the calls, and we are going to talk with Jasmine, who's calling us from Columbus, Ohio, listens on the app. Hello, Jasmine. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Yes. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show. Just want to get that out the way. I am torn between my partner and my children who do not like my partner. They have made it clear that they don't want a relationship with him because of previous arguments. I have been with my partner for over 8 years and want to stay in my relationship with him, but I do not know how to tell my kids that I am still in the relationship because I do not want them to be angry or hurt by my decision. I am very close to my children.
How old are they, and are any of them still living with you?
She is in her early 20s, and my other child, he does not live with me, no.
And Jasmine, what has happened during the arguments that they are so upset about? What have they witnessed?
Well, mainly my daughter had a argument with my partner. He was to blame. He initiated the argument. And ever since then, she has made it clear that she wants nothing to do with him. I've forgiven him. I understand both sides. You know, they both kind of clashed a lot. So I understand their perspective, but she wants nothing to do with him. And just me bringing up his name, she gets teary-eyed. And I know that she is still hurt by the last argument that they had. He is open to having a conversation with her, but she has no interest.
Is this something similar to what has happened with her own father? Was he an argumentative man?
She unfortunately does not have a relationship with her father.
Did she ever?
Which made it even harder for her to open up to my partner, though we've been together for over 8 years. Mm-hmm.
Did she ever have a relationship with her dad, or he wasn't in her life at all?
She did up until about two years old of age.
Okay. And does your...
So she has struggled with that.
Uh-huh. Does your partner live with you?
Unfortunately, because we could not blend families and because of that argument, we now live in separate homes. She left that night that they had the argument and refused to come back home. And him and I made the decision because I did not want her out on the streets, or, you know, I was so frantic and concerned about her, we just decided to live separately again.
And your question for us is how to handle telling your daughter you're going to stay in relationship with him. Is that right?
Correct. And the hope, and I've been praying and, you know, trying to stay hopeful that, yes, it was bad what happened, but I feel that with communication, I'm still hopeful because it wasn't always bad. I mean, we all had good moments, but I just think she's just having a hard time dealing with it. I don't want to lie to her because I've always been very vocal to my kids about honesty is the best thing, and I want to stay true to that, but I don't want to hurt her, and I almost feel like I'm choosing him over her.
Blending families is really hard, Jasmine. I'm in a blended family. Thankfully, when we blended, our kids were 7. But it sounds like when you guys blended, your kids were in their teens, which is a really difficult time, especially for a father figure, you know, because it sounds like they didn't have any father figure before then, a father figure to come in. And so, yeah, I mean, families do have conflicts and we do hurt each other. It's impossible to live together for many years, probably even many months, and not to bother each other, not to hurt each other. The thing that's really important, though, is the repair process. Learning how to own, again, our side of the street, and say, you know, this, you know, I don't agree with what you did, but I can't justify what I did. Here's what I did. I'm going to own that. And then I'm going to ask for your forgiveness, regardless of whether, you know, you're going to ask for my forgiveness or not. And that's called repair. And when we do that, that's how we invite others into relationship with us. Now, your daughter, she's still pretty young. She's early 20s here, and so she's got some growth to do. And I heard you say that you can see both sides of what happened in you know, this conflict that happened. And you also said that your partner is willing to have a conversation. When he's willing to have, when you say he's willing to have a conversation, is he willing to do repair? Is he willing to own what he did and ask for an apology?
Yes.
Okay. So that's good.
Yes. I hesitate to say that only because at the beginning he wasn't, because of teenager, you know, attitude and things like that happened at home. But after having a conversation with him, explaining that those are my kids, if we can't come to some type of, you know, agreement, or, you know, try to fix things, then unfortunately I am going to have to walk away because my kids are very important to me and I don't.
So, Jasmine, you can hear the music, but don't go away because we're going to take a quick break. But this is very tense. Like, we are feeling the tension and we're not in your house. And so I know that this is really tense for you. And healthy relationships, there is tension, like you said, Mark. But we have to learn to navigate that in a way that's life-giving, that fills us back up and doesn't put us on defense. We'll be right back. We'll give you some direction after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can listen to us, and we want to hear from you. So if you listen on the app or you download the podcast for a later listen, or you listen to us live on radio, we love to stay in touch with you. And if you can't ask a call or ask a question during a live recording, you can go to newlife.com/radio, and there's all the information there. Or if you're watching us on YouTube, there's a QR code that you can scan, and we'll give you directions that way. Right now, we are talking with Jasmine. And Jasmine, this is really complex. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of missing pieces. I want to ask 15,000 questions, but I'm not going to do that because we only have a few minutes left. I really want to get you some clarity because I can feel you holding your breath, trying to manage all of this in the meantime. And what I want for you is I want for you to have the life that you want with your kids and for this relationship that you say you want. I want him to be the man that he needs to be. And I don't want you to have to hold all that, but that's my problem. I'm obviously feeling a lot for you, Jasmine. But Alice, let's start with you. Mm-hmm. How can we help Jasmine?
Jasmine, although I won't press you to reveal this, but we just suspect there was more to the argument. Maybe something bigger. Maybe aggression. Maybe there was substance use. We just suspect that there was more, perhaps on your partner's part. So we're worried for you. We're worried for you and for your daughter. And we hope you take your next steps with a lot of caution. And you might want to do some individual counseling work before you make the decision one way or the other, because I think you're right. If you choose him, I think you will lose your daughter. And it will send her the message, even though you don't want it to, that you're choosing him over her. I think that that's inevitable with the way the situation is right now. What might change that is if he will pursue reconciliation, which I don't think he is. I think he's saying I'm willing to, but I don't think he's writing her a letter, acknowledging what he did wrong, asking for her forgiveness. I don't think he's taken those action steps yet. And if he were to do that and clean up whatever that part is that hasn't been said, which might be a big part, then perhaps you can have both relationships. But I think if you choose now, you will lose one person. And I don't want that for you.
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell you concretely one way or the other, Jasmine, unless you could briefly give us details of the blow up. You don't have to tell us everything, but just briefly so that we can understand the significance.
So it was just, I don't want to say he was picking on her, but he approached her in a aggressive tone, and it was very combative. And she, I think, was not in a good headspace. And they just started, you know, arguing with one another.
Did it get physical, Jasmine?
No, it did not.
Okay. But was it scary for your daughter?
No, not scary. She was just angry.
Okay. Oftentimes what's underneath anger is fear, right? We get angry because it gives us this temporary burst of courage to push back, especially if we feel like we can't escape. But I want, because anger is a secondary emotion, I wonder if it was fear. And I wonder if you went to her now that things have calmed down, if she would say that she was fearful in that moment. It sounds like, yeah, there's some things that needs to be addressed with your partner, and maybe that's his aggression. I mean, I hear you use these words, aggression and combative. Those are not good words to use when it comes to conflict. They do produce a fear response, or they would produce a fear response in another person. And so maybe that's where she's now drawing this hard line of, like, I can't live with somebody who's going to behave this way. And that may be something that you'll have to think about and also assess whether he's also considering that in himself too. If he's also saying to himself, well, I crossed the line here. I really got to a state that I don't want to get to. Where did that come from? How do I work on that in myself so that doesn't happen again? Go ahead, Ben.
Mark, Jasmine, I want you to address the fear that you have of bringing this up with her, because that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the worst possible thing that could happen if you are honest with her that you're still in this relationship?
That she will be angry with me and not want to have a relationship, you know, that we won't be as close anymore, and she will look at me differently. That's my biggest fear.
It's hard. It's a hard place to be.
Yeah, I would say this too, Jasmine. I think some of your consideration here is going to be, what level of commitment are you willing to give to your partner? What level of commitment is he willing to give to you? Because I think it would be a little bit different if you were married, because then I would say, well, now they're both in your life and they both need to learn how to interact with each other because they're going to be around for a long time. And so they, you know, each one will have responsibility to learn how to figure that out. But it sounds like you're really on the fence of, maybe I don't want to be with this person. So the one constant in your life then, I would say, is your daughter.
Jasmine, I cohabitated before marriage too, so I know the pros and the cons to it. And it just muddles our decision-making ability so much. And I know that you're separated from him now. And that piece of the separation, it might still be good for the ongoing future for you to clarify what kind of relationship do you want with this man and how well does it align with spiritual beliefs. And it's so easy for us. I've done it too. It's easy for us to get sucked into that and to not stand by what we believe in. So this is all really confusing. Please let us connect you with a counselor so you can get clarity about what you really want and then what you're willing to risk, because it is likely somebody will be upset. But reconciliation work on your partner's part with your daughter could change all of that.
Well, and you know what I was thinking too, is how do we help Jasmine know? I mean, the one book I was thinking of is This the One? Could be helpful. Because even though this is an adult relationship later on, you've lived together, clarifying if this literally is the one could be helpful. But there's got to be healing in this relationship mm-hmm. with your daughter. What do you guys have a suggestion for that? I mean, I'm thinking of so many things, but like what you just said, Alice, the counseling will be helpful. Mm-hmm. Jasmine, you need a space to talk honestly about this and to get some freedom about this.
When we have to be so choosy with our words, because we're hesitant to fully speak the truth out as exactly as it is. I've been in that place before too, Jasmine, where I'm doing management of the information. I got to withhold this here. I can't say that over there. And it means there's brokenness in multiple areas of the relationship. And that's why that individual counseling can help you figure out what is in your control to work out and to change. And what do you need to be asking of your partner and your daughter? And what do you need to be telling them?
Yeah. Mark, do you have a book suggestion?
Alice, you got the book list in front of you. What do you think?
Well, the reason why I asked you is because I'm thinking that How We Love could be helpful in this situation, because Jasmine, there's some disconnect as far as your attachment. I don't know, you know, if you've ever heard us talk about this, but I think it could be helpful to discover your attachment style in this process, to know if this is the one, if this is the man that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. But
I always think How We Love is a great book. I think everybody should read that. That book changed my life, and I think it's changed many.
All right, we'll send it to you, Jasmine. We'll be praying and hope for the best on that one. Thank you, Alice. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, listeners. If you need help, call us. You can go to newlife.com as well. We are here for you.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing. And we're so glad that you're here.